Hello, everyone. Welcome to the February 2nd, 2021 meeting of the Tompkins County Legislature. Please join me in the Pledge of Allegiance. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic which stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Thank you very much. Roll call of members.
Okay. Rich John.
Here.
Dan Klein.
Here.
Dan Corman. I think she's coming now. Mike Lane. Dave McKenna.
Here.
Glenn Morey.
Here.
Hold on. We've got a couple people joining us. Glenn Morey.
Here.
Martha Robertson.
Here.
Mike Sigler.
Here.
Shauna Black.
Here.
Amanda Champion.
Here.
Deborah Dawson.
Here.
Henry Granison.
Here.
And I'm going to go back to Ann Corman.
Present.
Okay, we have, and Les Flynn McBean Claiborne.
Present.
Okay, we have 13 members present.
Thank you very much. Petitions, presentation of proclamation petitions, communications and notices. You all would have received any communications. I have one proclamation today, which I will read. Thanks to legislator Henry Granison for his work in writing this proclamation. Whereas the first event recognizing Black history was celebrated during a week in February 1926, encompassing the birthdays of Abraham Lincoln and Frederick Douglass, two key figures in the history of African Americans. And whereas Negro History Week represented the culmination of efforts of Dr. Carter G. Woodson, the father of Black history, to enhance knowledge of Black history through the Journal of Negro History, published by the Association for the Study of African American Life and History, which was founded by Dr. Carter G. Woodson and Jesse E. Moreland, and whereas the celebration was expanded to a month in 1976, the nation's bicentennial, and 50 years after the first celebration, and whereas African Americans helped develop our nation in countless ways, those recognized, unrecognized, and unrecorded, and whereas the contributions of African American citizens and scientists, inventors, educators, farmers, homemakers, and explorers of earth and sky have been recognized annually during National African American History Month, and whereas African American citizens have participated and continue to in every American effort to secure, protect, and maintain the essence and substance of American democracy, and whereas Tompkins County is home to an active, growing, and civically engaged African American community, and whereas virtually every aspect of our community's life has been influenced by African Americans, whether in arts, medicine, government, labor, business, or volunteerism, now therefore be it resolved that the Tompkins County Legislature do hereby proclaim the month of February 2021 as Black History Month in Tompkins County, And resolved further that together with our entire community, we join in celebration and recognition of the African American community. Resolved further that the Pan-African flag shall be flown on the county's flagpoles during Black History Month, signed and proclaimed this second day of February, 2021. Thank you. And thanks again, Henry. Happy Black History Month, everyone.
Yes.
We are going to have a very brief executive session this evening. We hope to get through a meeting quickly so that everyone can go back to getting under their blankets or shoveling out their snow so they can get out tomorrow. Thank you. Privilege of the floor for the public. Is there anyone here?
No, we had no one request to speak or any comments submitted.
Okay, thank you, Kathy.
Mm-hmm.
Municipal officials, I know that Mr. Lynch had asked to join us, and I see George McGonigal. So, Robert Lynch, thank you very much for joining us today.
Good evening. And by the way, both Martha and Leslin, you will be missed in the next legislature. I know that you've decided not to seek new terms, and we will miss you, and Tompkins County will miss you.
Thank you.
A lot has happened in Enfield since I talked to you several months ago, and I hope it was good. It was controversial. There have been news stories about it. I kind of believe, like they say, a foreign policy that politics stops at the water's edge. Well, maybe in this case, politics should stop at the town line. So what I'm going to tell you tonight are just the facts. I'm going to try to keep the controversy at bay. We'll discuss that in Enfield, but there has been a lot of controversy. You've probably read about it in the newspapers and on the online weeklies. But let's start with this. We have a new supervisor. You may remember that on the 30th of September, Beth McGee resigned as supervisor of Enfield. And we kept that position open for about 3 months. There was a lot of discussion, repeated meetings about it. But it finally was resolved on the 12th of January. We had a rather contentious meeting, but in the end, Stephanie Redmond was unanimously elevated to be the interim supervisor. She will serve through the remainder of 2021. She has indicated she will run for re-election, or election, I should say, as supervisor in this year's election cycle, which is a two-year term in Enfield. Fully sworn in as supervisor, and she will serve us for the remainder of this year in that position as supervisor. She was the deputy supervisor before. Ever since Supervisor McGee resigned, she was in charge. She was acting supervisor, and now she is fully supervisor of the town for the remainder of the year. We've labored through a series of musical chair moments in our town as far as our town board is concerned. And I've got to have a scorecard to remember everything. First, Supervisor McGee resigned in September. Then Councilperson Mimi Mahaffey resigned from her position just 5 days later. In mid-November, we appointed Michael Miles to succeed Mahaffey as councilperson. Then December 9th, Stephanie Redmond resigned as councilperson, in part to prepare herself for a potential supervisor's appointment and in part to pave the way for her chosen successor. But it left us for a while with only three voting members on the town board, a bare quorum, so we had to have unanimity in everything we did. 1 week later, after Redmond's resignation, we on the board appointed to the board the successor Redmond had requested, namely James Ricks, who becomes the first African-American town board member in Enfield's history. Congratulations to him, and he's on the board now. He has not indicated whether he's going to run for a full term this November. We'll leave that decision up to him. But that didn't end matters, because on January 9th, Michael Miles resigned his town board seat, ending his brief two-month tenure. Miles openly voiced concerns about the direction and tone of town conduct and governance. I'll leave it there right now. So even with the Office of Supervisor filled, we're now looking for Miles' replacement. We've advertised on our town website for applicants. We hope to fill the this last vacancy next Wednesday the 10th, which is a week from tomorrow. There are already, as of this afternoon, three applicants for that position, so we'll have some choices to select among, so that's good. That takes care of the town board composition. There's been other Enfield business. At our January 13th organizational meeting, we again, for the second straight year, declined to put the Pledge of Allegiance at the start of our monthly meetings, except should someone request the recitation under privilege of the floor. It's been a point of contention in Enfield. Our supervisor said at that meeting, the pledge, quote, means different things to every person, end quote. I'd moved to put the pledge back in, but it didn't receive a second, so the motion died. Also, in January, with just three voting members, we considered but defeated a resolution that I'd submitted that would have strongly urged universal public vaccination against COVID-19 and publicly renounced any anti-vax conspiracy theories. We may consider that again with more members on the board at next week's meeting. And on a more positive note, perhaps in January, we unanimously declared June 19th, as a town government holiday. And I checked the Tompkins County personnel files, and your county government hasn't done that yet. Not that I could see. But we at Enfield did it. Our town supervisor, town highway superintendent, I should say, had recommended we add Juneteenth as a government holiday. Councilperson Ricks moved the motion. I seconded it. We passed it unanimously at our January meeting, and we're proud we did. One final thing. You may remember in 2019, we had a town clerk's race that ended in a virtual tie. Ellen Woods won over Mary Cornell just briefly for the Democratic primary. Well, Mary Cornell announced last week that she is running again for town clerk. And Ellen Woods, the incumbent town clerk, has not yet decided whether she's going to run for a second term. She said she might run for town board. She'll make that decision later. But we are going to have perhaps a familiar race again for the second straight time in Enfield. And I guess that takes care of it right for now. A lot of business, never a dull moment. And thank you for your time.
Thank you very much, Mr. Lynch, for your report. Any questions or comments for Mr. Lynch from the town of Enfield? Martha?
Yeah, I seem to think we have some staff people who live in Enfield. I wonder if anybody's, you know, thinking about running. I won't say any more. Anyway, good luck, Robert. And, you know, it sounds like you have seniority now on the board by a lot, right?
I am the only person whose office will not come up for election this fall because when somebody resigns, then under town law, that person that a town board appoints only gets to serve through the next election.
Right.
So, we've got highway superintendent up for election. We've got supervisor. We've got three councilperson seats up for election. We've got the town justice. We've got the town clerk. We're going to have a full slate.
All right. Well, good luck to all of you.
Yeah, definitely sounds like it. And hopefully there'll be lots of folks stepping up and throwing their hat in the ring. Henry.
Yes, thanks, Robert, for your comments. I was curious about the Juneteenth designation. So is that a paid off holiday?
Yeah, that'll be a paid off holiday for town employees, highway department workers, town officials. So we're going to have that as an official holiday. It's uncertain as to whether the state has really declared it as an official holiday. I know Governor Cuomo declared it by executive order last year, but I don't know. Legislation.
And so you just added another holiday.
We've added
ticket.
We've added it as a paid holiday for our people. It's a good thing, and it's a good recognition, especially since we have recognize the importance of African Americans in society by our own action of appointing a diversity candidate to our town board. And it's a good step, and it's the right thing to do.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thank you very much, Mr. Lynch, board member from the town of Enfield Board. Anyone else? Questions or comments for Mr. Lynch? No. Okay. Moving on to George McGonigal, City of Ithaca, Common Council Representative.
Good evening, everybody. It's good to see y'all. Can you hear me?
Good to see you, George, and yes, we can.
Okay, good. There's a lot going on in the city. Our meeting is tomorrow night, our council meeting. As Leslyn pointed out, it's African American History Month, and tomorrow we will award the recipients of the Diane Sams Award this year. I don't know who that person or persons is yet, but we'll find out tomorrow.
George, you accidentally muted yourself.
Sorry. The city got a grant of $900,000 to be distributed over a three-year period to establish the LEAD program in conjunction with I can't think of the name of the organization that's going to help us with that. But Leslyn and Travis Brooks were instrumental in helping us get this grant. So we have high hopes that this will make things better for not only the people who suffer from drug issues, but also for the police department, make things easier for them. And there'd be less incarceration, and we have high hopes for that. The REACH program is going to be involved with that. The big development news tomorrow night is we will be voting on whether or not to approve the agreement with Vecino to build mixed-use apartments and conference center on the two-thirds of the Green Street Garage site. We will be transferring that property to them for a dollar. If it passes, it probably will. In addition, we will add to this agreement, perhaps, in a vote to have a local labor requirement for this project. We did that last month for the Rimlin project, which is the big project just up the street towards the hotel. We do now have a local labor requirement for that project, and we'll be voting on whether or not we want a local labor requirement on this project as well. It's a low bar. It's only 30%. It should be easy to hit, and it's a starting point. We hope to continue. Some of us hope to continue this trend, and we're getting a lot of support for it. And I personally am pretty excited about it. In addition to the vote on the Vecino project, we will also be voting on the local City of Ithaca room tax, which the governor finally approved So this will help pay for the conference center. Okay, in addition to all this, the city of Ithaca and the town of Ithaca have come to an agreement in which our historic preservation staff member, Brian McCracken, will share his expertise with the town of Ithaca in a joint cooperative arrangement. So we're excited about that. That's all I have, except to clarify, there's been some uncertainty about the mobile command vehicle, the SWAT truck. The mayor and the county had talked about using the mobile command center as a staging vehicle for COVID vaccinations. That was before drugstores, pharmacies became involved and were allowed to distribute the vaccine. So that arrangement is not going to happen. The SWAT truck is still active as it has been. Nothing's changed. It's not been decommissioned. The SWAT team has not been decommissioned. So all those things remain as they have been. That's all I've got.
Thank you, George.
Except one thing. Henry, you've been doing a great job keeping everybody up to date on the COVID stuff, and I really thank you for that.
Thank you very much, George. Questions, comments for George, Mike Lane.
Hi, George. We always appreciate your coming. Was watching one of your committee meetings on public access or governmental access the other night, and you were there. And I heard you folks start talking about city redistricting. And I wondered what you can tell us about what that process would be like, whether you'll have a redistricting committee. I was really pleased to hear that you folks are going to be out front on that because it's so important.
I don't have any information about that. I mean, last time there was a special committee. I think I was on that committee. I certainly went to a lot of the meetings, and they talked about changing the number of districts as the county did. You guys did change your number of districts. We did not. We stayed with five, and I think that was a really good move for us. But I suspect it'll be a similar study before it happens. Population areas have shifted. I'm sure we're going to change the boundaries of the wards. All the Novar apartments along East State Street didn't exist when we made the count last time. So, and obviously, there's a lot more people in the center of the city. And North Campus, a large part of that's in the city. So I think the boundaries will definitely change. But as far as how we're going to study it, that hasn't really started yet.
Okay, thank you. Well, at least your folks are beginning to talk about it. That's great.
Yep. And I'd like to know where you got that sweater, Mike.
Oh, it's an Argyle.
You're styling.
Thank you, George. Thanks, Mike, for your question. Henry and then Mike Stigler.
Yes, thank you, George. Are you running for re-election in 2 years, George?
I'm not up for re-election.
In 2 years.
Oh, in 2 years? I don't even know if I'm going to be alive in 2 years.
I was wondering about the chief of police. When is he stepping down, and what's going on with the search?
Cervante would be the one to ask about the search. I'm not sure that it's started yet. The chief has agreed to stay until this spring, hopefully after the reimagining the police study is completed. And then what we'll have to do is find an acting chief. And because the search may take up to a year, we're going to do a serious search, both within the department and outside the department. So it's kind of a tough spot we're in, among many other tough spots we're in.
Yeah, thank you.
Yep.
Thanks, George. Thanks, Henry. Mike Ziegler.
George, I was just wondering about the Vincenzo project. I should probably know this because I know we've talked about it at the IDA, but it doesn't hurt to reiterate it. Are they going to be following the city's new green policy, even though it's not in place yet? Are they going to not use natural gas on that project?
I don't know the answer to that question, Mike. I'll find that out for you.
Okay, cool. Thanks. You'll circle back, as they say. Thanks.
Right.
All right. Thank you very much. Anything else for George? No.
Thank you. Yep.
Continue to stay warm and safe. Thanks for joining us.
I was out all day in the snow.
There's still a lot of snow at my house, George. I'm not sure what happened there. You missed a spot.
Yeah, I missed. Yeah.
All right. I don't have any. Appointments. Let's move on to. There are no special presentations or discussions for this afternoon. I am looking to see. Pardon me?
Is it time for legislative privilege on the floor?
Really, Henry? You have to call me out on it? I was hoping nobody noticed. I jumped right over. I was like, no legislators want to talk tonight. Ah, shucks. All right. Privilege of the floor for legislators. Deborah Dawson, go ahead.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I wanted to thank the Office of Student Government Affairs, or Student Government Relations, I believe, a group of Cornell students that invited the legislators to meet with them yesterday at noon. I attended with Mike Ziegler, Henry Granison, and Rich John. I'm sorry that more of us didn't join that meeting because it was extremely informative. And I urge you to take advantage of the next opportunity. It was just very heartening to see these young people being so civic-minded and so engaged and working so hard on issues that matter to them and to the larger community. So when we have another opportunity, I hope more of you will come, and I want to thank the students who were involved.
Thank you, Deborah. You know, hopefully there'll be other opportunities. Everybody can't make everything every time, but hopefully there'll be other opportunities. Dave McKenna.
Thank you, Leslie. Just want to let everybody know that I, too, will not be seeking re-election this time. So had a good time doing this, enjoyed it, doing it for 12 years, and it's now somebody else's turn. Thank you.
Dave, you're breaking my heart.
Yeah, I'll miss you.
Thank you so much for letting us know, Dave, and for the time you served. We all got 9 more months to hang out with each other. You served.
Dave, on behalf of Enfield.
You served your district well. Thank you very much. Well, y'all just switched around now. Annie, I don't know what happened. Everybody switched around. I had an order. So excuse me, Annie. Let me go ahead, Annie.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So I first just wanted to respond to what Dave McKenna said, and I'm really sorry that you're not running again. I've really enjoyed working with you and learning from you, and I really especially enjoyed working with you and helping represent the town of Enfield and doing that together. I feel, from my point of view, I feel we did that pretty seamlessly. And I really appreciate your patience and showing me the ropes and a lot of the different committees. As far as Black History Month, I wanted to just talk real briefly about two women who people might not know, who helped shape or who were instrumental in Black history and the Civil Rights Movement. And I encourage people to look up somebody that you don't know, learn something new this month. So one is Flo Kennedy. She was a founding member of the National Organization for Women and one of the first Black female lawyers to graduate from Columbia Law School. She helped found the Feminist Party in 1971, which later nominated Representative Shirley Chisholm for president. And the next woman is Marsha P. Johnson. She was an outspoken and fearless trans woman who played a vital part in the fight for civil rights of the LGBTQ community in New York State. She was known as the patron at Stonewall Inn who initiated resistance on the night the police raided the bar. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Annie. Moments in Black History. Thank you for that. Martha.
Thank you, Leslyn. Hey, Dave. We'll just have to go golfing. I don't golf. We'll have to do something. You know, all the extra time we'll have. So thank you for serving. I also want to thank some other people whose names I don't necessarily know, but the Highway Department and all the other, the town plowers and all the people who've been out there on the roads. They started before it started snowing and they've been really hard at work. I can't see very much of a road from where I am, but it's pretty good. It looks pretty clear. And I think it's just been constant. So I know that those folks are working around the clock right now. So I just want to lift them up and thank all of our highway workers tonight. I want to point out to you, give the heads up about NYSAC committee meetings next week, and then webinars coming a week or two after that. And also NACO has a set of meetings coming up. They actually have a conference that they're going to spread out through the month of March. I think everybody's probably gotten the NYSAC committee meeting schedule, but I'm planning to put together an email about NACO. There really are a lot of opportunities, webinars and different meetings that I've been able to enjoy and learn from. So I'll send that information out to you and hope you take a look at it. Thanks.
Thank you, Martha. Mike Lane and then Mike Ziegler.
I would certainly second what Martha just said about our highway folks who went out there in the snowstorm, but I would add to that our Sheriff's Road Patrol, our fire and ambulance folks, and all of those people who have our first responders that keep us safe even in terrible storms. But what I really wanted to talk tonight about is something that happened in the town of Dryden. which has embarrassed so many people, including me, even though I didn't happen to be at a particular meeting. We have a town board and a town planning board that's been working very hard to update our comprehensive plan in the town of Dryden. And it's one of those things that you do every few years, and it gives a model for trying to go ahead. We have one at the county. Villages have them. Cities have them. The town planning board was trying to solicit information and respond from the people of Dryden, and very, very commendably had three public Zoom meetings to allow people to speak and talk about different categories of the comprehensive plan. At the last meeting, there was, I guess they call it a cyber bomb. During the middle of the meeting, someone took over the audio and apparently some of the whiteboard there and put in out terrible, ugly, racist comments that horrified the people who were there for the purpose of talking civilly about our comprehensive plan. This is something we have never experienced in Dryden, and I categorically, I have no hesitation to categorically say this does not belong in my town, our county. The town is doing everything it can to prevent any reoccurrence. They're going to schedule the meeting again, town planning board, and they are going to turn the matter over to the sheriff's department for investigation to try to find out who did this harassment. I mean, things were said. Names were used. The N-word was used, for example. And I just want you to know this isn't anything that the people of the town of Dryden would ever support. I have no idea where it came from. These kind of things can come from next door, or they can come from across the world. And I just wanted to express the fact that this has no place in our town or our county. Thank you.
Mike, thank you very much, you know, for that. I remember hearing about it and just getting goosebumps all over my body and feeling, although I wasn't personally there, feeling violated. And I imagine the people who were in that meeting, how they felt as well. We're in the age of technology and cyber meetings and Zoom meetings, and people are using every opportunity to spread hate, to be hateful, to be discriminatory, and to be disruptive, disrupting processes that are meant to support our democracy. So I was sad to hear that. And we all just have to be exceedingly careful with use of this technology and making sure that, you know, who we share the links with and knowing who we share links with and who's invited to participate. Generally, it's not foolproof, because folks who want to do harm know how to get around systems. But thank you for raising that. Thank you for saying that's not the spirit of the people of Dryden. We don't believe it to be. So thank you for that. Mike Ziegler.
So what I would say actually isn't as heavy as all that. So thank you, Mike, for talking about that. My thing was I was down in the city today shoveling, and I shoveled out certain areas, and then I went and shoveled out some fire hydrants. just wanted to tell you, I shoveled out the one and then I went down the street to shovel out the other one and it was already done. So thank you, people in the city of Ithaca, for acknowledging that that actually is important. If you live near a fire hydrant and you have the means, shovel it out, because you have no idea. In a fire, you need quickness, and that really does save lives. It's a little thing you can do, and yet if you did it, it really does save lives. So thank you very much, whoever did that over on Lynch Street.
Thank you, Mike, for that. And I'll take this moment very quickly to say that Chief of Staff Dan Cogan and I believe Council Alderperson Dutson Nugent, who often comes and reports with us, and Alderperson Seth Murtaugh, I don't know who else was involved, worked on creating an app called Snow Angels, encouraging folks. We'll make sure that you get a link to it. Encouraging folks to help shovel out corners and hydrants in the city of Ithaca and elsewhere. I thought it was the neatest idea, especially as people are trying to find ways to get outdoors and to be helpful, since we've all been going through the ordeal of COVID-19. So thank you for mentioning that, because it did trigger my memory on Snow Angels. So we'll make sure you get the app for that so that you can pass it on and encourage people to help shovel out spaces. Martha.
Yeah, thanks for letting me have a second bite. I was at that meeting. I was at all three of the public meetings that Mike talked about. And, it really was it was traumatic. I mean, there were death threats in the chat. The town board came out with a statement, like by the end of the day, by the end, early the next day, condemning it and explaining that they're going to, it's already been passed on to local law enforcement, and they're already working on finding out what happened and who did it. I will say, I think that one of the, and I can't say that this was connected or anything, but there was a whole lot of really angry vitriol because the group had reached the 100-person limit. And I found it extremely stressful that people couldn't accept the consultant's statement that, they just didn't expect to have more than 100 people. There was no effort to shut certain people out, which was the accusation. I don't know whether that tension led to anything else, but there, it was such a an angry reaction to, a simple problem that the town quickly said they'll have another meeting. So, and the next meeting will have a 500-person limit. So the whole temperature of the town and the country really just has to come down. And I couldn't help but feel that it was part of the larger climate of anger. And we just really have to try hard to walk in the other person's shoes, understand what the other person is saying. Yes, people were frustrated. They couldn't get in the meeting. They could have certainly known that there would be other opportunities. So I just hope that the town can move forward together on this important comp plan. I was really glad to see that the planning board did not shut the process down, but they're moving ahead. February 10th is that next meeting. So Mike, thanks for bringing it up, and I appreciate law enforcement getting right on it. Thanks.
Thank you, Martha. Anyone else? So I want to take this opportunity to just make a quick announcement. Annie, thank you for the Black History Facts. Every year, Black History Month, GIAC does take the opportunity to put out some facts, and so I encourage you to visit the GIAC Facebook page. We're collaborating also with the Ithaca Voice, 28 Days of Black History Facts, that will be, you know, posted and printed. Sometimes little known history about folks we don't know about, and just increasing our own knowledge of the contributions of Black people in this country. So look for it on the GIAC Facebook page or the Ithaca Voice. And then on February 26th is GIAC's annual Black History Month Community Challenge Show. It's a party for Kamala, and you're all invited. You know, wear your pearls, put on your chucks, come on down virtually, and join the celebration. We enjoy celebrating the diaspora, and especially the cultural excellence of Black Americans and Black people in general. So you're invited to participate. Mike Sigler. Last comment?
Oh, no, I'm sorry. I should have taken my hand down. But I didn't.
Okay. All right. So let's move on. Speaking of, your hand is back up, Mike. It keeps popping back up. Speaking of Black history and just some of the stuff that's going on in our community, I just want to let you know that I did share a column that's coming out in the Tompkins Weekly. It might be this week. Under, I think it's called The Democratic Viewpoint. I can't remember what it is, what the column is called that you write under. I was asked by someone to write that. For this, I think last month it was Anna. Anna wrote. This month I did one. And given everything that's been going on and some of what you've been sharing and what has happened at the Driving Board meeting and everything else, some of my own experiences, I chose to write about the sting of racism. And so stay tuned. Look for it. It should be in Tompkins Weekly this week, maybe tomorrow. I'm not sure when it comes out. So just wanted to share that with you all, and I appreciate everyone continuing to raise concerns, raise awareness when things like this come up. Okay, moving on. Reports from County Administrator, County Attorney, and
Director. Excuse me, Leslyn, you have some workforce development appointments under your chair's report. There are three of them.
Oh. Well, let me find that.
I should have brought that to your attention before the meeting
thank
started.
You.
I'm sorry.
Thank you. I have it right here, Kathy. Thank you.
Okay.
So, chair's appointments. Workforce Development Board. So, the Workforce Development Board, I have Todd Brewer, Labor Organization Apprenticeship Representative. His term will expire June 30th, 2023. Kip Sarasaro, Mandated Partner Representative. I hope I pronounced the name correctly. Term expires December 31st, 2022. Jay Shapiro, Business Representative. Term expires December 31st, 2022. Those are to the Workforce Development Board, and there are also appointments from the Public Safety Committee to the Criminal Justice Advisory Alternatives to Incarceration Board, known to most folks as CJATI.
Leslyn?
Yes.
Actually, those three should be done under the consent agenda.
They're on the chair's appointments on my list.
I'm sorry.
Then I will move those, forget those, and we'll take those. So only the other three on the chair's appointments. Got it. Thank you, Kathy.
Sure.
And reports from county. Actually, do I have any staff who are waiting for any? We don't have that many resolutions on the agenda. We have consent agenda.
I think just Todd Brewer's here for the IDA appointment.
For the IDA appointment. All right. Well, that's coming up. Why don't we go ahead and and take the consent agenda and take that resolution before we get into our presentations from...
Leslin, that one's not a consent item.
No, I said, why don't we take the consent agenda and then take that resolution as well? So, before we get to the reports from county administrators and others. So, consent agenda, resolutions and appointments to be voted on as a group, unless any member of the legislature requests that a resolution or appointment be instead included separately and individually as part of the business of standing or special committees. Advisory board appointments on the consent agenda from the Public Safety Committee, Criminal Justice Advisory, Alternatives to Incarceration Board, CJATI, Dina Bodner, DSS representative, term expires December 31, 2022, Louise Miller, agency providing crime victim services representative, term expires December 31, 2023. Benet Rubenstein, at-large representative, term expires December 31, 2023. Those are the advisory board appointments and the resolutions on consent agenda. On the Planning, Energy, and Environmental Quality Committee, Resolution A, Budget Adjustment for New York State Department of State Resiliency Planning Grant to develop the Tompkins County Resiliency and Recovery Plan, ID 9859. Resolution B, Budget Reappropriation of Funding in 2020 Budget to the 2021 Budget for the Business Energy Advisors New Construction Program, ID 9850. Resolution C, Business Energy Advisors, BEA, New Construction Program Budget Adjustment, ID 9851. And Resolution D, Budget Adjustment for Business Energy Advisors, BEA, Lansing Program, ID 9852. May I have someone move the consent agenda, please? Moved by Rich John, seconded by Deborah Dawson. Any discussion on any of this? No. So, vote on the consent agenda.
Okay. Rich John?
Yes.
Dan Klein?
Yes.
Ann Corman?
Yes.
Mike Lane?
Yes.
Dave McKenna?
Yes.
Glenn Morey?
Yes.
Martha Robertson?
Yes.
Mike Sigler?
Yes.
Shauna Black?
Yes.
Amanda Champion?
Yes.
Deborah Dawson?
Yes.
Henry Granison?
Yes.
Leslin McBean Claiborne?
Yes.
We have 14 ayes, 0 noes.
Thank you. That carries unanimously. And now. Pardon?
Does she mean 13?
No, I think everybody is here now.
Yeah, we only have 13.
You're right. 13, so.
Who am I missing? Oh, yeah,
Anna
Kellis.
We have vacancy.
You. Thank you, Anna, for keeping us on our toes. All right, continue to take things just a little out of order. Martha, Housing and Economic Development Committee, would you like to move your resolution on the Standing Committee?
Yes, I would. It's document 9867. Appointments to Industrial Development Agency and Tompkins County Development Corporation Board of Directors. I so move.
May I have a second, please? Seconded by Dave McKenna.
And
Madam Chair.
Who said that?
Mike Lane.
Hi, Mike.
I wonder if I could move to, let me tell you my problem here. I wondered if we could move to separate because of the vote on Todd Brewer, who I have done some work for in my legal practice, I feel I need to abstain on his. No aspersions on him at all, but I think I have a conflict. So if we could, if I could move to separate that one out, I'd appreciate it.
Yes, the one line for having Todd there?
Yes, please.
Okay. I don't have any objections to that. Martha, is that okay that we will vote and
sure,
to separate?
Kathy, how do we do that? Anything?
I think we need to Kathy vote on to separate it.
Yes.
Mike
moves to separate. Or amend the resolution to take out the appointment
just
of Todd
to separate
separately.
Well, can I accept
what
that
you
as
say,
friendly?
Kathy?
Yeah, why don't you make that friendly?
Can I accept that as friendly?
Sure. Yeah.
Okay.
Kathy says sure. It's friendly.
So then we'll just take two votes, I guess.
Yes.
Okay. Before then, can I just mention that so just so the public knows, this appoints three legislators as we voted in December on the composition of the IDA board. Legislators Rich John, myself, and Mike Sigler. Rich John to serve as chair of the IDA. Todd Brewer to be the representative of organized labor. And Laura Lewis to be appointed as the elected municipal official representative. Now, it turns out that's actually a mistake that we voted in back in December. That's the language that was in the resolution in December, I think, without the intention of actually making that a municipal position, but rather it has been an at-large position, and that was the intention for Laura's appointment. So Kathy advised the HED committee that we need to pass another resolution to change the composition again on that item and to name Laura to the at-large seat. So that'll come next month. So just if you see this, like, what, we got another IDA resolution again, that's why. But we might as well just, you know, we should just go ahead with these two motions anyway for now. Does that make sense?
All right. What? Let's vote on the motion to separate, and then we'll get back to that, Martha, because I think I have a question in the end. So,
we took it as
you said it was friendly. You said it was friendly. So
should we vote on the main one first? Or that's the butt, Todd?
Yes.
Don't we have to vote to separate? Oh.
It was friendly. We don't have to.
Okay.
So let's vote on the main motion minus that one resolve. So any other discussion on that resolution? All right, let's vote.
Rich John?
Yes.
Dan Klein?
Yes.
Ann Corman?
Yes.
Mike Lane?
Yes.
Dave McKenna?
Yes.
Glenn Morey?
Yes.
Martha Robertson?
Yes.
Mike Sigler?
Yes.
Shauna Black?
Yes.
Amanda Champion?
Yes.
Deborah Dawson?
Yes.
Henry Granison?
No.
Leslyn McBean Claiborne?
Yes.
We have 12 ayes, 1 no.
All right. Thank you very much. And now we are going to vote on the additional resolve that Todd Brewer be appointed as representative of organized labor for a term that expires December 31, 2022. Any discussion on that? All right, let's vote.
Do we need to move it?
Oh, wait a minute. Yes, we need to move and second it.
I'll move it.
I'll second it.
We'll keep you on track tonight, Leslyn.
Thank you. I wasn't sure that we needed to, but that's all right. Okay, moved and seconded. Let's go ahead and vote on it.
Rich John?
Yes.
Dan Klein?
Yes.
Ann Corman?
Yes.
Mike Lane?
Abstain.
Dave McKenna?
Yes.
Glenn Morey?
Yes.
Martha Robertson?
Yes.
Mike Sigler?
Yes.
Shauna Black?
Yes.
Amanda Champion?
Yes.
Deborah Dawson?
Absolutely.
Henry Granison?
Yes.
And Leslie McBean Claiborne?
Yes.
We have 12 ayes and one abstention.
Okay, that carries. Thank you very much for that. While we're still on it, Martha, I do need just a repeat on what you said. So there's another resolution that will come from the committee about Laura Lewis's position on the IDA.
Right, last month, and welcome, Todd. It's great. I'm looking forward to working with you.
Thank you.
Last month, we voted. If is it in the minutes? Maybe it's in the minutes. It was back in December. We voted to have three legislators, a representative from organized labor, and instead of saying two at-large representatives, at-large members, it was listed as one at-large and one elected municipal official. And that was not... Obviously, we didn't talk about that. I don't remember us talking about that at all. That seemed to have been carried over from an earlier designation of the membership. Heather McDaniel noticed it, Kathy noticed it, and so the point here is to be, I mean, I guess if people specifically want it to be an elected municipal official, then we should discuss that, and then I suppose we could leave this as is. But that wasn't the intention, and I believe it was inadvertent that was identified as Laura's position.
So HED will take it up and either bring a new resolution. Thank you for the explanation. And to echo Martha, congratulations, Todd, on your appointment to the IDA. All right.
Thank you, everybody.
You're very welcome. So thank you, Martha, for taking that up. Thanks, everybody. Sure. Do I have anything else that anyone is waiting for? No, that was the only resolution. We should be good. Just going back quickly to Chair's report, I just want to bring to people's attention as well, the amount of fraud we talked about, the cyber stuff that's happening. I received this lovely letter from the Department of Labor about my unemployment benefits. I did not apply for unemployment benefits. I am not the only one. There's several other people who have gotten this. So folks are using other people's names. It came to Leslie McBean, and that's why I know something was very wrong. And, just letting me know, about my weekly reporting so that I can claim my benefits and so on and so forth, and that I was eligible. So please pay attention. Like I said, I'm not the only one that this has happened to. There are other folks who've been reporting this as well. Moving on to reports from County Administrator, County Attorney, and Finance Director. County Administrator, Jason Molino.
Good evening, everyone.
Evening.
You shouldn't feel alone, Leslie. I believe Frank Krupa not only claimed his unemployment benefits in 1 week, but also died apparently on Facebook.
Yeah.
So he was having a rough week last week as well. You shouldn't feel alone. You can explain that later. Also, just to add to the thanks, I want to include our facilities team that is keeping our parking lots clear and our facilities clear and sidewalks. They've worked diligently so the folks have a safe place to come to work in over the past snowstorm. Frank and I are going to go through the now traditional, I guess, report that we generally provide folks with respect to our COVID update. Let me see if I can share my screen. I think everyone can see that. So this is, again, a similar format we do every 2 weeks. Just to give you a little overview, it's been a little bit of a challenging past few weeks. A lot's been going on and a lot of changes. We still have had an uptick in cases since the last time we met. We're starting to see that slow down a little bit. I mean, if we see that trend continue over this week and next week, I think we'll be heading in the right direction. Unfortunately, there have some unfortunately been some additional deaths as a result of the disease as well. Some executive orders that have come out, there's been some changes over the past 2 weeks about who can vaccinate who, and that's generally tied to the limitation in the amount of vaccine that we're getting and where the state is getting and how much the state is getting. So we've had some changes with respect to who we can vaccinate, who we can't vaccinate, meaning 65 plus has primarily been limited to pharmacies and state mass vaccination sites for the local health departments have been limited to essential workers. So that's been a change, and we've tried to communicate that out. As far as some larger guidance that's come out, last Friday, the governor advised that local health departments can make a decision on high-risk impact sports as whether or not they allow them in their county. It was done county by county. Frank, I know, spoke and corresponded with his colleagues in the public health realm in Central and Western New York, as did I, with county administrators and executives to try to have some levels of consistency. And that guidance was issued mid last week for high risk sports, both schools, youth, and adult recreation sports. Also, we have some limited doses coming in. Last week was 600, this week is 700, which is good. Not as good as it was a few weeks ago, but as long as it continues to grow, it would be beneficial. And higher ed starts to come back, and they've started to come back over the past week and a half. And they're doing it on a scaled back model, so they're not all coming back at one time. Also, from a communication perspective, we published some videos on quarantine isolation vaccines that are translated into different languages, and they're available for our constituents, which is good to see. Here's a slide that we've reported on, number of hours worked, actual amount of regular pay, comp time. We're obviously well almost at 2.5 million at this point in terms of time, staff committed. FFRA and then basically family medical leave and COVID leave for folks related to dependent care dependent, I'm sorry, dependent of care of dependents for employees. We extended this at the beginning of the year, consistent with the federal law, till the end of March, and I suspect come that time we'll be reviewing this again if this needs to continue to be extended. This has also provided a good benefit to our employees who have childcare needs. It also allows them, the safeguard that not to come into work when they're not feeling well, so that there isn't a concern about employment matters, which I know a lot of private employers are having some challenges with. And then again, related expenses, as you can see, over 2 million. A big portion of it is testing. Here's a little bit of a summary from the community testing site. Remember, we've been doing this since September 1, since the legislature authorized the initial $300,000 for community testing. You reauthorized appropriated a new amount this last legislative meeting. In total, about almost $1.2 million paid out. Our cost at the end of the day would be close to $400,000. We have been receiving or have received some FEMA reimbursements, so that cycle is starting. It doesn't happen every week. I think it's happening monthly, so we should see how February fares and how much reimbursement we'll get. But it's started, and we've started to receive reimbursement for some of the original submissions, which is good. Still, steady at this point in terms of number of tests at each sampling site. So it's a service well used, and I think has benefited our ability from a disease surveillance perspective in the community. Frank, I think I'll pass this over to you.
Thanks, Jason. And want to start by giving credit to Dominic, the PIO group, Deanna Carithers, and others that have been working to put together these vaccine office hours with local physicians. And so we'll be announcing those in the next day or so, where folks can sign up to have office hours where they can ask questions about the vaccine that they might have. And we've tried to find a diverse pool of medical professionals to help help share that message. So we're excited to be launching this, and I really appreciate the work that the PIO group, Deanna, and others did to put this together. We're going to be jumping into data. So this is a chart that essentially demonstrates how we've been progressing since the summer. So the blue line with the high peaks is our daily active case numbers. So you can kind of see where we had, you know, peaks. The September peak was the beginning of the fall semester. And then you start to see as we move into November, the winter season coupled with the holiday season driving our daily active case numbers up. I think probably the thing we want to look at more closely is the, you know, daily new positive cases, right? You see that that kind of goes up and down, but it's been a fairly steady, you know, steady line across the last several months as we've seen the, you know, the uptick during the holiday season. But we're still doing well here in Tompkins County, even with the holiday spikes and, you know, a returning of students happening now, we're still doing really well with disease. And you know, that's a credit to all the steps that the community is taking to help us keep it under control. So just pulling up our demographic data again, you know, obviously more testing is happening and we're, you know, seeing things still be right around the, you know, where we would expect them to be. On this chart, we'll probably see the age range start to shift a little bit again as the students are returning to the community and the large-scale surveillance testing occurs. So it's good to see that as we, you know, look at it over time, even with all of the testing that was going on with the student population, it's still right about where we would expect based on our population. This is our race slide. Similar things are, you know, they move a little bit each time that we bring them, but I don't know that anything dramatic has really happened, you know, with the numbers. So, you know, we keep watching them and keep reporting them so we're sure we're paying attention to anything that might jump out. I think ethnicity is, you know, right along those same lines, the Hispanic and non-Hispanic are pretty close. The unknown obviously would make up the difference based on the information we're able to collect.
I think that's all in terms of the presentation we have. I think what Frank said, you know, a lot's changing rapidly. We continue to get limited. So I think the biggest challenge we have right now with the vaccine is limited supply. We have regularly reinforced with the state, and they recognize the capacity that we have in order ability to effectively administer vaccines. But unfortunately, it's limited right now by what the supply that the state is getting. And when that changes, we'll be able to ramp up the operation at the mall and then start to branch out into the community as that supply begins to increase. Frank, I don't know if we have anything else, but happy to answer any questions we can.
Okay. Questions. I have Mike Lane, Shauna Black, Martha Robertson.
We continually receive questions about or from our elderly our elderly residents who want to sign up for the COVID vaccine. They are not computer oriented. They want a telephone number to call. They want a list to be put on the list and to be called back when there's vaccine available. Why can't we do this? I've spoke about it before. I don't think there's an issue that has come to me from my constituency and from people across the county. Worried about 98-year-old parents who can't get on the computer to try to sit there for 3 hours to hope a slot opens at one of the drugstores or the state fairgrounds or something like that. They need help down here. Why can't we help them?
The short answer, Mike, is that we don't get any vaccine for 65 plus at the county. All of that is only available through pharmacies and the state sites. And quite frankly, the timing that we get information about when vaccine is being delivered or allocated to the local pharmacies, it's too late. Those slots, if they create them, are already gone. So the state has created this system where there's two locations that are designed for 65 plus pharmacies and the large sites. And we have little control over how those processes unfold, even if we wanted to be involved. So that's really the challenge that we're faced with right now.
Thank you for the response, Frank. But you have to understand this. I have not received so many telephone calls about this whole COVID issue as I have about this particular thing. And I think they're saying that Tompkins County is letting them down.
Yeah,
I think we definitely empathize with that and are frustrated, just as frustrated, Mike, as our constituents are. To take one thing that Frank did leave out is that the state specifically directed local health departments and communities not to create waiting lists, in addition to preventing us from vaccinating the 65-plus population. It's not something that we agree with. We've definitely voiced our concern with it. We want to be able to, when the vaccine and the supply comes in and that restriction is lifted, to be able to assist our 65-plus population the best we can. Unfortunately, right now, we have no control over this issue. But we're equally as concerned and equally as frustrated.
And I do want to emphasize, thank you, Mike, for raising it. I think we're all getting the same calls and questions, from our seniors who frankly deserve better. I want to emphasize that it's not within our control and it's not for the lack of trying and, reaching out to the state and saying, please allow us to do. The state has made its decision, and it really is frustrating to all of us. Shauna Black, Martha Robertson.
Yeah, I wanted to ask if there have been any other cases with the UK variant.
We have a couple that we're investigating right now. I don't have the final results from the lab yet on that. But we do monitor cases that are connected to international travel, and we're fortunate that we have the CHS and Cornell partnership that allows for local sequencing. So we might have more information in the next day or so about some potential additional cases.
Okay. And can you also provide guidance on wearing more than one mask?
Yeah, we're getting that question a lot, it's certainly using common sense. If you're wearing a mask correctly and you put a second one on, it's only going to help if you're wearing them both correctly. There isn't state guidance really that requires or even recommends it at this point. The CDC has begun talking about it. I do have some concern that at some point there becomes, you know, the law of diminishing returns on these things. We're struggling to get people in some instances to wear one mask correctly and at enough time. And my concern is that the potential added benefit of moving towards wearing a second mask compared to people throwing their hands up because it's one more thing we're now asking them to do and just giving up altogether. We've got to be measured in our approach with these things. Now, if something changes tomorrow and there's new information, of course, we'll recalibrate. And certainly if either New York State or the CDC gives further guidance or directive, we would, of course, follow that.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Martha?
Thank you, Leslie. Thanks, Frank and Jason. I see Winter's here. The beard is back, so it's good. A couple of questions. You said we got 700 vaccines this week. Who are we able to do locally then with the health department and the hospital? Is that still first responders and teachers and...
So the 600 of the 700 doses are allocated to the local health department, and we have been directed to do the phase 1B essential worker population. We have chosen to do some prioritization within that group to add some structure to the chaos. So last week it was public, first responders, corrections, and PK through 12. This week we're going to focus on public transit, our homeless people that work in our homeless shelters, childcare, and continue on with PK through 12. So we're in the process of doing a phased rollout of registration for those groups. It will go directly to the employers and other associations that support those folks to help get it out so that there's an equity in when the link becomes available to people. And so that's the approach that we're taking with the 600 doses. 100 of those doses were allocated for OPWDD or people with developmental disabilities. And so the state has told us what facilities, staff, and clients still need to be done. I will say that we prioritize this group in our first clinics. And so many of the folks with developmental disabilities in these facilities are already vaccinated. So that's the good news. There are quite a few employees, and we're finding a troubling rate of declination amongst direct care workers. And so we're hoping that having this added opportunity will help us reach some more folks, but we've definitely still got some work to do on convincing hesitant people to get vaccinated.
All right, thank you. That's good to hear. So those kind of invitations are going through employers, basically, so it's not just one of those general Hunger Games things. Okay, that's really good to hear. I heard, I saw on the website, on our health department website, there is a phone number to register, and there's also a note about 211. So help us understand if you're that phone number 833-697-4829, is that where somebody, if you're eligible, if you're 65 or older, you can actually register that way?
I think that 833 number is the state hotline. Somebody will have to correct me if I'm wrong on that. And then 211, we have set up to answer questions. And we do expect that when we get to a point where we have more slots than people, there will be an opportunity to use 211 for phone registration. It's just with the slots disappearing so quickly, the phone registration piece isn't compatible right now. But as far as the state sites, I believe that 833 number is supposed to help people get registered there.
Yeah, that's how it looked. Okay, so registration at 211, not yet, maybe later. But the number Mike and others can use, 833-697-4829. Appreciate that. Do we have the capacity to mail something? We mail our property tax bills. Can we mail something to everybody, a postcard with some information, Is that something we've thought about?
Yeah, it's at the printer, and I think is going to be going out relatively quickly. Dominic and the PIO team have created a postcard about vaccination and why to do it. And so, Dom, were you trying to jump in?
I was just going to say it should be in mailboxes within a week or two, and it has some key questions on the front. And many of the things we've been talking about here, so that should be in mailboxes soon.
Keep telling y'all, these folks are on top of it.
All right. Thank you so much.
We've got a crack team here. thank you, Martha. Thank you, Frank, for the responses. I think I have Ann Henry Deborah.
Thank you. So some of my questions were answered, but I have just one or two more. First off, I want to appreciate everything that the health department, our administration, our EOC, everything, and I'm probably missing people, everything everybody's doing. I know you're scrambling to keep up, and so I appreciate your patience as we're trying to figure out the latest that you've learned. And so anybody in the community that's watching this meeting, you know, so this is a lot of what we're doing. Things are changing constantly. So, and we're all just trying to keep up. And I know there's been some people complaining that the county is, you know, not getting information out. I mean, it's what I've seen is that we're trying to get it out as fast as possible, but it is confusing because it keeps changing. So one of the questions I have that I'm not 100% clear on. So for seniors, are they not allowed to sign up at the CMC site? I know the state wants them to get them at the pharmacy, but if you could clarify that part first.
Correct. So we've been told we have to prioritize 1B essential workers. And so all of our efforts have to be to try to reach those populations with the allocation that we have. They've not gone so far as to say we have to turn someone away that comes through that's eligible in one of those other categories, but they have been very strong in their language about who we have to prioritize. And so that's part of why we're doing, we're providing our people are because of their employment. So we're working through employers to get the link out for the people that are currently eligible. So it doesn't create confusion for others in the community about where they can get access.
Okay, great. So that's good to clarify that. Thank you. And then another question I have is, so I'm not sure what's going out on the postcard. I'm glad there's some information going out to people, you know, directly via the mail. The phone alerts are helpful. Two things, I'll kind of combine them together. So one is about, I know there's some work going on about trying to figure out how do we get people who are, you know, who are going to be falling through the cracks. Because right now there's not enough vaccine for anybody, but or for most of the community. But how about those people who are homebound, senior living apartments, people with disabilities, people who need transportation? I know there's some talk, you know, about possible some pods out in the community. So I'm just wondering if what you can say about that so that people know, and also can some of that information of whatever there is, if that, and again, I realize you're just trying to figure it out and do all this, but if that information could be somewhere, like for instance, that we have somewhere on the website or also the County Office for the Aging, their website that says, here's information for seniors about vaccinations, like a one pager versus going, there's so much on the health department site with just in the COVID section, it's really hard to navigate. And because it keeps changing, it's really hard to find things.
Sure. So I'll work backwards through those, Ann, and please repeat if I miss something. Dom and his team has created a one-page FAQ to try to simplify things. It's printable. So it can, not only can people print it out at home, but different agencies in town can print it out to provide to their constituents. So I don't know if that's final and published yet, Don, but I know it's close because I've seen a version of it. So we are working on that to try to simplify things for folks a little bit, because you're right, our website has a lot of information on it and can be difficult to navigate. You asked questions about some other populations and that you know, might not be able to come to a large-scale site. One thing I want to mention is that you're going to be hearing about, if you haven't already, what the governor is calling pop-up sites. And so I want to be clear that those pop-up sites get additional vaccine that doesn't have restrictions on it, right? The restriction is that you have to do a target population, whether it be a community that is predominantly people of color or a low-income community or senior housing. But those are very difficult to do when you've got a very small group of people like essential workers that we're currently allowed to use our vaccine on. So we have made it very clear that we will take a pop-up site anytime they want to give it to us, give us the vaccine, tell us who to give it to, and we will do it. We've talked with community partners on how we might do that and do it quickly. So we're really just waiting for the state to pick us as one of their pop-up site locations. More long-term, we very much understand that we're going to have to get to some of these populations, particularly when we get to a point where there's more vaccine than people that want to come to the mall to get it. And we're going to have to remove barriers for those people that might be hesitant. We've got to make it as easy as possible, and that means taking the vaccine as close to them as possible. So all of that is in our planning. It really will be driven by vaccine supply and the restrictions that are placed on us on that supply as we receive it.
Great. Thank you very much, Frank. That does answer all my questions.
Sure.
And thank you for all the great work you're doing.
Sure.
Thank you. Henry Deborah.
Yes. Thank you, Frank, for all your work. I just have some quick questions. One, is a 211 taxi available for people to get vaccinated?
No. So the taxi was meant for transporting folks to get tested because there was concern about they could be, you know, infectious at that point, right, if they're sick and they want to get tested. The site at the mall, particularly because we're focusing on essential workers, generally we're asking folks to use public transportation if they don't have their own. We are working with Gadabout to be able to support folks with disabilities, and if we are ever allowed to do our senior population, to help them with transportation. Certainly, if anyone has transportation needs, they can call 211 and they can help them navigate getting to the vaccination site for their appointment.
Because I was thinking, if the essential worker is asymptomatic, wouldn't that basically expose people on the bus to them?
Well, I mean, that could be said for anything, anytime somebody's riding on the bus, right? The risk exists. So, but when you're going to get vaccinated, we're assuming you're not sick. We don't want you to come if you're sick. If you happen to be asymptomatic, you could just as easily be getting on the bus to go to the grocery store because you don't know it. So, obviously there's risk, but it's no greater risk than navigating the community on a regular basis.
I know Cornell is plans on setting up a pod. Is IC and TC3 also going to set up pods, do you know?
Yeah, so IC actually has a very well-developed pod program. We've been partnering with them for 6 or 7 years. Our previous preparedness coordinator actually developed an award-winning program that helped educate students in their public health programming on what a point of dispensing is and how it works. And then they helped us develop plans, and they helped IC develop plans. And then each year with their flu pod, they actually activate it, and they use students to help run it. So they vaccinate over 800 people each year for flu using a pod process at Ithaca College. So they are actually the furthest along on our higher ed partners in developing pod plans. TC3 is actually an open pod location for the county. So we have an MOU with them. We have a plan and everything in place to be able to use their facility to do that. So if they chose to do a closed pod for just their populations, the plan already exists. It really would just be about staffing and figuring that out. So I think both of them are in a good place. And then, of course, Cornell's got the biggest group that they would have to vaccinate. So they're working on it, but we've been working with them for years as well. I think we'll be okay. Pods are not super difficult to do. Particularly if you've practiced them and have experience with them. So it's really just about picking a location, staffing it, and then preparing for what the demand will be.
Okay, my last question is about the racial differential in terms of people who are being vaccinated. I emailed you guys last week. I've later found out that New York has not reported their racial data to anybody, to the CDC or whatever. And I also noticed it was a New York Times article that said 600,000 people were vaccinated in New York City. 263,000 of them had no racial data included. And so I'm just wondering, A, I know this doesn't work for Tompkins County because we have such a small racial population, but do you know the numbers of the percentage of people whose race is not accounted for in our data?
Yeah, so we're still looking at that, right? So when you register, there is a race and ethnicity question, two questions. They're optional. And we're finding a good portion of folks have chosen to leave them blank or move on. We are crunching the numbers, so we will eventually have data. It's hard to present, though, because it's not comparative to anything because it's a closed group of people that are currently eligible. So you can't really compare it to the general population numbers for a comparison. And so we're trying to look at what we have and figure out a way that we can present it that would be meaningful. But it is information that is captured as long as people are willing to answer the questions at registration.
Yeah, although the articles I read also said that age and gender, which is pretty easy, but age is captured almost 99%.
Yep.
And why is the race being captured? Because when people go to the pod, they have to sign in again, right?
Yeah. So the difference is age. Age is a mandatory because date of birth is an identifier. So if you have two John Smiths, the different date of birth help us identify them. So it has to be filled out. I think gender has to be filled out as well. I mean, I would point out that the only options are male or female. So, you know, how accurate that is from people being comfortable in how they're reporting. The race and ethnicity are optional questions. So it will change the response rate anytime something goes from mandatory to optional.
All right.
Okay. Well, anything you can do that can talk to people about collecting the data in New York State would be appreciated. Thank you.
That's also stuff that we, Henry, thinks are raising, but it's also stuff that we can encourage people, encourage our constituents to fill out the form. We can't just, wait for Frank and team to do that. We have to also tell folks, it's really important for us to get those that information so we know that there's equity in vaccine distribution. That's important. Thanks, Henry. Thanks, Frank. Deborah, we're going to have to wrap this quickly. Go ahead.
Yes, thank you, Leslyn. Mike, I wanted to give you this telephone number that your constituents can call. It's the Kinney Drug number. It's nationwide. It's 1-888-345-0550. Supposedly, you can contact Kinney directly and make an appointment if you're over 65. And then the only other thing I want to say is on behalf of TCAT and its drivers, thank you, Frank, for prioritizing public transit workers.
Sure. And
thank you.
To that point, Deborah, I'm sorry, Leslyn. These are really hard decisions, right? Mm-hmm. That drawing the line is not a comfortable thing to have to do. I wish the state had done it. I wish the federal government had done it. And quite frankly, the governor doubled down on it today and made it worse. He added more people into the currently eligible population when we already have a demand problem. And that doesn't help anyone. And so I appreciate I just want folks to appreciate we don't take these decisions lightly. There's a large group of us that talk through this, so it's not just me or Jason. You know, we're trying to make sure we're thinking of everything possible. But our goal is to vaccinate everyone who wants it, and we're just trying to do it in a system that isn't driving people, you know, crazy, to use, you know, a bad word. We're really just trying to make it manageable for everyone, so they know when it's their turn, when it comes to us, that there's a couple thousand people clicking for 600 doses instead of 20,000. And so we just plead for patience. We're trying our best. We know anytime we draw a line, there's somebody on the other side of it. But we're going to get to everybody, and we're trying to do it as quickly as we can.
Thanks, Frank.
Martha.
Thanks, Leslie. I want to ask about the Equity Hub. I can't remember the name of it. You mentioned last report that had just gotten started, and you didn't know much about what it was going to be. What? Any more information on that?
Not
you really. I can give a quick update. So that group has been meeting. They were asked by the state to create a list of senior housing facilities in the county. And so they've done that. They've reached out kind of on their own and with coordinated with us to just find out where those facilities are, so they would not be the ones that fall into the residential. So they've done that. They meet on a weekly basis, and they're reviewing kind of the state data. But beyond that, I'm not seeing a lot locally yet. But we are meeting with them weekly to kind of keep all of us on the same page and learn from them. And I know that they're working at both the regional and state level on some of this.
You meet with who else is in this hub?
So we have three representatives here in Tompkins County. So Dr. Dandali, Dr. Waldman, and Patricia, whose last name I always forget.
Fernandez de Castro.
So the three of them are part of the regional hub that is part of Jess's region. Patricia is also a member of the state equity task force. So she's working at the state and the regional level. We have conversations with the group, the three of us, Frank, Jason, or a member of the EOC, and myself, just to find out what they're learning and see how we can support them.
Okay, so that's going on, and they've started. And when you say senior housing, you mean senior apartments, not necessarily nursing homes. Okay.
Yep, non-nursing home, right. Senior living places, yep.
Okay, thanks very much.
So I'm going to try and wrap this. So I think, like everything else, I'm going to start where Amy just left off. You know, and just understanding what the equity hub, I mean, we're talking about representatives from throughout the state. So it's not just us. So I don't know, 200 or 300 people on this hub trying to talk through and make decisions. You can't imagine what that is and how that is. So eventually something will work out, but they're working through it. I want to give major kudos to Frank and Jason and the entire team, Amy, Dominic, and others, because I know you're not just, like Frank said, because I'm working backwards, they're not just doing this in a vacuum, talking amongst themselves. They're also, you know, talking with community members, trying to get input, trying to, you know, think of all the different scenarios and the what ifs, and when, you know, we get vaccines, how do we? Getting people to help with, you know, communications, developing communications plan, thinking of potential sites that, you know, if we are allowed to, you know, we can have some pop-up vaccination sites. So all of those things that they have been forward thinking around and putting plans in place in the event that we get vaccines, looking at what the federal government has stated, President Biden today, with what, 10.6 million or something like that vaccines out the door, and trying to get as many every week. So maybe we'll get more, who knows? And we're thankful for that. And with more vaccines getting approved potentially and coming on board. We know it's just taking a little bit, and we're asking for everybody's patience. But I know that there's lots of work being done. It is not just us. NYSAC continues to, as the collective group, reach out to the governor's office and ask for a little bit more control, for counties to have a little bit more control over the whole vaccination plan. Give us a vaccine. So it's hard. So when I hear Mike, say our seniors are feeling about us as a county, I clearly understand. I feel a lot of those calls. In my personal work, I have a whole senior program, 200 and something seniors registered in it. And I get those calls and they're very concerned about getting in, but the of 65 and over being restricted to pharmacies, and we are saying, can you loosen up the reins on that and allow us to do some more? So throughout NYSAC, that conversation is happening. So we're not the only ones feeling it. Other counties are also having the same conversation. Overall, we're just trying to do the best that we can with what we've been given. I do have a quick question for you all. There was a question that came to us about the schools and outside of vaccines. Now that sports are opened up and all of these things, higher sports, there is concern about schools being shut down. If, one person is in quarantine, an entire school is shut down, and people are asking, like, why? Why are we allowing them to do that? Is that our call?
Short answer on closing schools is that's not our call.
Thank you.
I can tell you confidently that I have not recommended or closed a single school. What we do is we do disease investigations, and oftentimes that leads to people being quarantined, not only students, but adults, teachers. And generally, when you see school closures occurring, it's because the number of adults that were exposed and need to be quarantined is too large for the school to continue to operate, in the manner that they think is appropriate. So I think in almost every occasion when schools have been closed, it's because of the adults that have been exposed. Different schools have different approaches to how strictly they pod students, how much interaction there is with different teachers with different students, and all of that plays a role in how many people end up being exposed. But it has been our position from the beginning that in a classroom setting, we quarantine the entire classroom. They're generally in there for extended periods of time, and so they may have been with a mask and more than 6 feet apart. But they're in the room for 35, 45, sometimes over an hour long. And so we consider that approximate contact, and we quarantine the classrooms. That really hasn't been changed since the beginning for us. And we do recognize that that has an impact, particularly if multiple adults are included in that.
Thank you for reiterating that explanation again, Frank, and who's responsible. Are there any other questions for Jason, Frank, Dominic, Amy, and the entire COVID Tompkins County, like I said, crack above excellent COVID team? Jason?
Just one closing thing is we're still waiting to hear back from the governor. I made a challenge to the governor that we can vaccinate so well that if they gave us 10,000 vaccine, I would let him pick any one of his 20 sites and we would do it faster, better, more equitably, and more efficiently. I'm waiting to hear back from him. I've said that note several times to our governor's rep, but had no avail, have had a response. So if you happen to see him, please know that we're waiting for a response and we're ready to challenge him. So. That's the only thing that I'd add to that.
Nice way to go. Gotta try all kinds of tactics.
He didn't seek any input from anyone before he made that challenge. I just want that on the record.
Ask what the man is.
Marty, do it.
What's the bet?
The lieutenant governor's coming soon, right?
Too many people were talking at the same time.
The bet was is if they gave us 10,000 vaccine, I'd let him pick any one of his 20 sites, and we would do it better, more effectively, more efficiently, more equitably. And then if we did that, they would guarantee us a minimum of 10,000 vaccine every week. I know he likes challenges and competition, so I thought I'd throw that out there. I sent that by email to our governor's rep and mentioned it to her a few times, and she said, we understand you guys know what you're doing, but when we get the supply, you will. So.
Hey, you know, our vaccination program does not get featured in the Wall Street Journal just because we're not doing it right.
Right.
So thank you all again so much for all the work that you have been doing in trying to keep all of us in Tompkins County safe and protected in every which way, not just around COVID, but also with the flu and all the other things that you have to do. So we appreciate it. All right. Let's move on. That was very informative. Finance Director, is there anything from you? I saw Drew at one point. And there's Rick. Hi, Rick.
I have a very short one tonight on casino revenue. You weren't expecting this, so let me share my screen here with you. Are you seeing this little chart here?
Not at all.
Not at all. Let me click on it. How about now?
Almost.
Now?
We're seeing it now.
Okay. We got an unexpected check last week for a considerably higher amount of casino revenue than what we planned. As you know, in the third quarter of 2020 here in this first column, we only got $82,000 because the casinos were up and running, but not too much. For the fourth quarter payment, which we just got last week, we got $336,331. And that brought our total year to date up to $837,299, which was more of a recovery in this fourth quarter than what we thought. All in all, when you compare it to the fourth quarter of last year, we were down 31.5% quarter to quarter. If you compare year-to-date receipts, we were down about $1.2 million year-to-date compared to last year, and that was down 58.9%. So how does this compare to our budget? Our original budget for the year was $1.5 million. So at the end of the year, that means we received 55.4% of our original casino revenue budget. It's a lot better than what we had thought we would get. It's still a large loss of dollars when you look at being down that much. $1.2 million, but I thought I'd share this news that we recouped quite a bit more in casino revenue with an upswing in the fourth quarter. And that's all I have for tonight. Any questions?
Yeah, well, with all the snow, we appreciate the sunshine, so thank you. You're any welcome. Questions to Rick? And Rick, if you don't mind, stop sharing your screen because I can't see folks.
You got it. Now we're back.
Okay, now I can see everybody. Any questions, comments? All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
County Attorney Jonathan Wood, any report?
A very short report. Just wanted to let people know that Airbnb says they will collect the tax that we passed at the last legislature meeting, and also put them in touch with the city about their yet to be passed, but passed by the governor, tax on bed and breakfast as well, and we'll see how that goes.
All right. Thank you, Jonathan. Any questions to Jonathan on this or any other issues? No? All right. Thank you very much. Let's move on back to our standing and special committee reports. Martha, any report from HED? You're just getting started.
Yeah, actually. And I wasn't even, you know, our last meeting was last Thursday, so maybe Mike Sigler should make this report, but which he is welcome to do, but
Martha, this is your, you know, this is your moment to shine. So,
okay, all right. So we met last Thursday. We did, as you saw, the resolution on the IDA. We had a good report from Nick Helmholt about the tourism numbers as of kind of end of the year, and what they have paid out to the recipient, the typical recipients, mostly the approximately 18 arts and cultural organizations. We did ask if they've been receiving have applied for the PPP program. I know the nonprofit agencies, many of them did and did receive that salary support. So Nick was going to check to see if those organizations had also applied. Those are the main topics that we did cover. We had a report about the rental assistance program, reuse of our CDBG money, and Megan McDonald was able to get some sort of permission from the state to make the program a little more flexible. So they're going back and recontacting. This is all done through INHS is actually administering that rental assistance program. And they're going back and recontacting anybody who either didn't finish their application because there was a lot of paperwork involved, or people who were denied because they didn't meet some of the prior qualifications. So those regulations were eased up. We're really pleased to hear that had been done. And we're hoping that they'll be able to get that money in people's hands to help to pay back rent. So those were the main topics that we discussed at the meeting. The next HED meeting will be the last Thursday in February. And as we've already discussed, we'll talk about the IDA again. So, and I hope to talk about goals for the year. So that's homework for committee members to think about for 2021.
All right. Thanks, Martha. Any questions, or Mike Sigler, is there anything you want to add?
No, I think Martha covered it pretty well. So.
Beautiful. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. We'll move on to Downtown Facilities Committee. Dave McKenna, Chair.
Thank you, Lesmond. Downtown Facilities Committee did not meet since the last legislature meeting. We will be meeting February 11th at 3 p.m. That's a change from previous. It used to be 4 p.m. So it'll be at 3 p.m. on the 11th. That's my report.
Thank you, Dave. Any questions for Dave? All right. Health and Human Services Committee, Shauna Black, Chair. Nope, I missed somebody. Sorry. Public Safety Committee, Rich John, Chair.
Thank you, Leslie. The Public Safety Committee met. We had a presentation from the Cattell Center on some proposed legislation in New York State called the Less is More Act, which would call for reform of our parole system. Right now, our parole system, roughly 65% of the people on parole end up going back into the system. It's also an issue locally because of the number of people held in our local jail on parole violations. Some of them, what are called technical parole violations, that are not crimes, but they can be missing a meeting, failing a drug screen, or not meeting some other requirement of parole. And certainly parole officers need some enforcement mechanism, but these people end up going back and sitting in our local jail at our cost for up to 60 days or even more waiting for a hearing. The system just is not working very well. And we had a very good presentation on it. And I believe we're going to bring a resolution in support of the Less is More Act at our next meeting. We're also going to have the Reimagining Public Safety report in draft form before us at our next meeting, which is February 18th at 3:00. That's a Thursday. This will start a process leading to public comment on the draft report, some revisions I anticipate, a lot of discussion, and it coming to the legislature for a vote, likely at a special meeting on March 30th before submitting to New York State on April 1st. The only other thing I'd just like to mention is our jail count today is at 34 with one board out and one board in, which is, again, is a historically low number. Happy to try to answer any questions.
Thank you, Rich. Questions, comments for Rich? All right. Now, Health and Human Services Committee, Shauna Blackshear.
Thank you very much, Leslin. We have not met since our last meeting, and our upcoming meeting is February 17th at 2 p.m., and we will be focusing on 2021 goals and priorities. Vice Chair Henry Grenison and myself will be meeting with department heads Thursday and Friday to get an idea of what they're working on, and those will be reflected in some of the goals that we put forth. Obviously, it's going to be a committee decision on what route we would like to go. So if committee members can also have an idea of some goals for the year, I look forward to hearing from everyone.
Thank you. Questions for Shauna? Okay. Facilities and Infrastructure Committee, Mike Lane, Chair.
Well, we met on January 21st. We didn't have any resolutions to consider, but we spent some time. It was kind of nice with the committee, which is basically carrying over from the previous committee. We talked about what we may like to see for our goals. We'll be talking more about that at our next meeting. But we were joined by Mike Hall from Airport and Jeff Smith from Highway. And, of course, Jason Molino, and we had a nice talk with not a lot of pressure. Jeff talked to us about things like updating the project map with the culvert location from the Bridge New York program. A lot of things are still in flux because we don't know exactly how much money we're going to get from the state, from the CHIP program, for example. That's the Consolidated Highway Improvement Services. I think that's not what it is. We also heard about some of the things for the airport. I think one of the things we would like to do would be to seriously pursue, seeing if we can move along the project to have the DMV testing site at the airport for the CDL licenses so that we can get our bus drivers and our truck drivers and other people trained and get their licenses here rather than have to take them to Binghamton or Syracuse in order to get those CDL licenses. So that's something we've talked about for a long time. We've had a lot of things going on at the airport, but this is one that we would like to see moved ahead this year.
Thank you, Mike. Any questions or comments for Mike? Okay. Moving on. Tompkins Intergovernmental Relations Committee, Martha Robertson, Chair.
Thank you, Leslin. We have not met since the last legislature meeting. Our next meeting is is a Friday, but that's not what our usual time is going to be. We moved it because of the NYSAC committee meetings. So the next meeting is Friday, February 12th at 10:30. Normally we will meet on the second Tuesday at 10:30. So we've moved from the schedule we had this past year. So second Tuesday is what the typical time will be. So that's my report.
Thanks, Martha. Any questions, comments? Yep. Government Operations Committee, Amanda Champion, Chair.
Thank you, Leslyn. We will be meeting this coming Thursday, February 4th, at 12 p.m. noon. We shifted our time a little bit this year, so you can join us at noon. We have quite a lot of resolutions on the agenda, a couple of policies, some budget adjustments, and a few sort of typical yearly resolutions. We're also going to be, as many of you are, talking about some goals for the year. So committee members, you can think about that ahead of time. And we're also going to be, we have a resolution about amending the rules of the legislature again. We're working on rules 6 through 12. So this is something that the committee talked about last month, and now we're going to vote on it, and then it will come to the legislature after that. And that's about all. Thank you.
Thanks, Amanda. Questions or comments for Amanda? No? All right. Planning, Energy, and Environmental Quality Committee, Ann Corman, Chair.
Thanks, Madam Chair. For me, the highlight of the last peak meeting, which was on the 25th, was a presentation from Rachel Carpatella regarding their sustainability program that they're doing in Westchester County. So I don't know if folks had a chance, if you hadn't had a chance, if you want to take a look at that on our on the YouTube channel or on the page on the Tompkins County website. I guess I'll ask Deborah Dawson was there any other highlights that you recall? I mean, there were some, you know, again, as Amanda said, some end of the year budget adjustments.
No, it was fairly highlight free outside of Rachel's presentation.
So it was very inspiring to see. I mean, granted, their county is almost about 10 times bigger than us, but it was really great to see all the different things they're doing there. Very inspirational. And our next meeting is going to be, we're going to keep the same day and time for peak. And that's our next meeting is Monday, February 22nd at 1:30. And one of the things on the agenda is an update from regarding the food system plan from Don Barber and George Savio. And just wanted to mention that the Case Board is working on an energy summit. There's a subcommittee of the Case Board working on that. So we'll have more updates as time goes by. So right now it's just in the, you know, just kind of brainstorming stage. And Deborah and also Martha, because Martha is the chair of HED, we met with Katie and Megan from the planning department just to hear from them what their plans are for the year so we could, you know, support them and they could support us, and also to kind of figure out, to parse out, you know, what falls under HED and what falls under PEG. So I think that was a really fruitful meeting. So I wanted to thank Katie and Megan for meeting with us. Anything else you wanted to add, Deborah, my vice chair?
No, you covered it very well. Thanks, Annie.
All right. Thank you, Ann. Any questions or comments for Ann? All right. Budget, Capital, and Personnel Committee, Deb Dawson, Chair.
Well, the last meeting we had was
under Martha's leadership, I don't recall anything of major consequence that we discussed. We have some cleanup to do on the direct report evaluations. I think Martha sent something out to all of you today. I am hoping that next year we can move that process earlier in the year so that we can get it done without running into budget season, and then we won't be hanging over into the next year. We will be talking at our meeting on February 8th about what our goals as a committee will be in the coming year. And I don't have anything more unless Martha has something she wants to bring up.
Anything you want to add, Martha, from the last meeting?
No, but I would add that then this coming meeting, the message sent out this afternoon said that we'll set up an executive session at the end of the budget committee meeting. So hope any legislator that's available and interested join the committee on that discussion about the direct report summaries. And if you're certainly welcome to make comments as well. So just wanted to add that.
All right.
By email or whatever. Thanks.
All right. Thanks, Martha. Thank you, Deborah. Questions, comments, Dan Klein?
Thank you. Budget question. I'm wondering if we have a number yet for 2020 of what our shortfall was.
I think that's a Jason question. You wonder if we have a number.
I don't have anything updated at this point, and I don't know that I can, to be honest, with the uncertainty of what state reimbursement is going to be. I think the last time we spoke, it was around $4 million. We've had influxes in little areas. So, for example, this increase in casino revenues to the good. There's been other instances where it's been to the bad. I don't know that I can refine it anymore until we probably get more into the closeout of the year.
When is the closeout of the year?
Well, I think they'll probably close the books, Rick. Rick's here.
We're supposed to submit our AUD on April 30th. And that's probably the best time that we can give you a number around April 30th. I will have preliminary numbers that I usually share with Jason every month, starting about the end of February. So by the end of February and the end of March and in April, we'll have fund balance, projected fund balance figures for the end of 2020 for the general fund. And I can share them with Jason, and he can share them with you, or I can share them with all of you at once. But April 30th is the day when we're supposed to submit our report to the state.
And okay. There's another piece to this, Madam Chair, if I may. Dan, I don't know if you went to NYSEC's budget presentation, but last year the budget gave the governor the right to withhold up to 20% of state aid to counties, depending on what our budget shortfall was at the state level. What's happened this year is the budget is contingent on two different levels of federal aid to the state. And if we do achieve the minimal level, supposedly we'll get 15% out of the 20% that's been withheld, distributed from the state. So that's a big chunk of money that we just don't know if we're going to get or not. So that just makes it all that much harder. I really don't think that Jason and Rick could do much better.
Great, thank you.
It's also good to get that timeline, and that's normal every year, somewhere around, end of April, May, we'll have a better sense. So thank you, Dan, for asking that question. Thanks, Jason and Rick. Henry and then Martha.
Yes, I thought that the governor's budget was for either the 5% cut or the 15% for the future. I didn't think it was going back in the past.
No, that's... Go ahead, Jason.
So the governor's budget talks about $3 billion of aid, $6 billion total, $3 billion this year and $3 billion next year, a bunch of FEMA reimbursement, and then FMAP aid. And that has to do with if that comes in, then the reduction may be only 5%, meaning there would be refunded to 15%. Now, that's aggregate across the board. That doesn't necessarily mean every piece of state aid would be there. So that may impact different counties differently. So that's what I think Deborah was referring to about the stimulus or the federal, the unrestricted federal aid that comes into play, and that's yet to be seen or unknown. I intend to present at the next LEDGE meeting kind of a summary of the state budget to date, and just based on the executive budget, some slides that Dave Lucas went over, and I have a meeting this week with some other staff about what we know and what the proposed budget so far may mean impact-wise. So I'll put together some slides for everyone in 2 weeks and kind of go over it a little bit.
Do we have a sense of the Biden stimulus bill, how much New York would get?
I don't have that information. I know it's been going back and forth as to what it could be or what it couldn't be, but I don't have that information as of yet. And I don't think NICE actually issued anything specific by county yet.
No. No, I do know, or I did read today about the president's COVID or FEMA reimbursement 100% to states. And so I'm sure we'll get more information on whether some of that 25% of the states no longer have to have that share. So I don't know how that trickles down to counties, and since it just happened today, I'm sure you'll have a lot of information, and maybe there'll be something that supports our FEMA reimbursement and all of that as well.
There's also, Leslie, there's also some extension today, or the possibility of extending the FMAP funding through the rest of the year. That's a big to-do, and that may help cut the state's deficit down a few billion. The concern that was voiced at the NYSEC, and I'll talk more about this in 2 weeks, and I share this concern, is that, a lot of this is one-time aid that doesn't necessarily address the structural issues or the revenue replacement in the longer term when you're talking a 2 to 3 year recovery, which is where there is consistency on thought. So I think that plays as part of this issue. While the media deficit may be minimized, but it's one-time aid that doesn't necessarily come back in 22. And what happens then? Like I said, I can talk a little bit more about it in another 2 weeks.
Mm-hmm. I'll look at it on the bright side, Jason. And I'm going to use one of these now, so don't you laugh at me. A bird in the hand is worth two in the bush. So I got it right, yes. So we might have, something. Martha.
Thanks, Deborah started out the answer to I was going to say to Dan's question, and another wrinkle is, which is we have to keep remembering, is that the state's fiscal year doesn't end until March 31st. So the governor can still move money around through March 31st, and it's still his same budget, where for us it's now crossed over into this next fiscal year. So that's complicated, which is also different from the federal fiscal year. So I think it's just a matter of, he said that it would be a 5% across the board cut, but I think at the same time he said that schools wouldn't get cut, basic schools cut. So you have to figure then that we're going to get more of it if you're going to equal out to 5.
Right.
There's that. Sort of informally, there's a lot of conversation that Cuomo would not have built a budget based on $6 billion coming from the feds without having had a good conversation with the Biden administration, that was a pretty safe number to count. Overall, in the President's Rescue Plan, it's $350 billion for state and local. So I don't know if 15 is aspirational, but the sort of the suspicion is that there's probably a good guess that 6 will be coming.
Well, thank you all for all the information. That regardless, we know that back to Dan's question, that we still got to wait a little bit and all these puzzle pieces fit in place. Thank you. Anything else from Deborah, Martha, and Budget? Thank you. Workforce Diversity and Inclusion Committee, Henry Grandison, Chair, and Ann Corman, immediate past Chair.
Yes, we said goodbye to Ann Corman as our previous chair. We also elected Rachel Graham, an employee in the county clerk's office, as vice chair of the WDIC. We also passed the proclamation that was read about Black History Month. Then we discussed the history of the WDIC and really coming to fruition in the 2004 year. And then they had great outreach. It was created in 2005. And they originally did a great outreach, had 33 people at the first meeting. But then they did an amazing job of taking on lots of achieving, goals. They challenged the civil service process. They got department heads to deal with HR issues. They got diversity and inclusionary language to talk about. They also did a diversity statement, diversity policy. They also got project assistance, which were told that they couldn't do that, but they did it. They also tried to get pass-fail on civil service, which they did not get, but you know, that might come back around. And they had a big party in the Commons when they had their logo displayed. Recruitment and resource guide, which many counties wanted, the climate survey, communications plan, diversity plan, and they did amazing work. And so I would in fact advise people to go look at the tape to hear all the amazing things that this committee has done. And I just hope to achieve some of that in the future.
Thank you. Henry, any questions for Henry? Anything from you, Annie?
Well, I was just looking to see if Mike Lane was still on the meeting, because I know once we talked about history that maybe he'd be jumping on that. But really, I also encourage people to go back. This is the history of our county. And it's even more relevant now, you know, than ever. And it's about, you know, moving forward with, all the great work, you know, on the shoulders of all the great people that have done this work, before us. Thank you.
All righty.
Martha had her hand up.
Martha?
Just a quick question, Henry. Who was the chair during all those years of accomplishment at WDIC?
We don't know who that person was. They have since left the legislature.
No, she hasn't.
Oh, yeah, we got her to admit to staying on the board even after she leaves the legislature.
Excellent. Thank you, Leslie, for this many years.
She not announced it to the end of the meeting, though.
Thank you. Thank you. And it wasn't just me, you know, Kip Hart, Mary, Roberts, who have been there from the start, Lisa Holmes, all contributed to the history of the work of WDIC has done. So
thank you. Kathy Covert, too.
And Kathy Covert.
And Kathy Covert.
Yep.
Thank you. All right. There are no individual member filed resolutions. Let's go to the minutes of the previous meeting. Move, Deborah, do you have your hand up to move them? Moved by Deborah Dawson, seconded by Amanda Champion. Any discussion on the minutes? Shauna's daring you all. She's like, all right, let's have a vote on the minutes of the previous meeting.
Rich John?
Yes.
Dan Klein?
Yes.
Ann Corman?
Yes.
Mike Lane?
Yes.
Dave McKenna?
Yes.
Glenn Morey?
Yes.
Martha Robertson?
Yes.
Mike Sigler?
Yes.
Shauna Black?
Yes.
Amanda Champion?
Yes.
Deborah Dawson?
Yes.
Henry Granison?
Yes.
Leslyn McBean Claiborne?
Yes.
We have 13 ayes, 0 noes.
All right, we've gotten all our voting things out of the way, and now as part of the business of the meeting, I'm going to ask for a brief executive session, very brief executive session, for the purposes of updates on personnel matter regarding a particular person, and I do believe real estate negotiations. No action will be taken on either of these while we're in executive session or when we come out of executive session. May I have a motion to go into executive session, moved by Deb Dawson, seconded by Amanda Champion. All in favor of going into executive session, vote.
Rich John?
Yes.
Dan Klein?
Yes.
Ann Corman?
Yes.
Mike Lane?
Yes.
Dave McKenna?
Yes.
Glenn Morey?
Yes.
Martha Robertson?
Yes.
Mike Sigler?
Yes.
Shauna Black?
Yes.
Amanda Champion?
Yes.
Deborah Dawson?
Yes.
Henry Granison?
Yes.
Leslyn McBean Claiborne?
Yes.
With 13 ayes, 0 noes.
All right. Thank you all for staying through and not getting a break tonight. We got through it.
Can I stay or should I go, Leslyn?
You should go, Rick.
I should go, okay?
You should go.
Have a good evening. Be safe out there.
Thank you. You do the same.
I will.